Members, you have, we have handed out this morning a new spreadsheet. In the bottom corner, it says revised 3/28/8:42 p.m. There are only two changes on it. On line 51, the commuter rail exemption, $7.7 million. That's the money that when Senator Murphy had the transportation bill through here, the sales tax exemption on the North Star Rail, and we had a discussion with Senator Murphy when the transportation bill was here that that really should be carried in the tax bill, and for some reason he felt it should stay in the transportation bill. Well, then when he got to the floor, there was an author's amendment that took the North Star Rail sales tax exemption out of the bill on the floor, so we're carrying it here on our spreadsheet now. The only other change on the spreadsheet from yesterday is on line, and that's on line 51. On line 94, yesterday in the Fergus Falls Renaissance Zone, yesterday we were carrying $1 million on that line. You'll notice today you see zero. The reason for that is the money that we were carrying yesterday was some previously appropriated money that we're just moving from Department of Administration over to the city of Fergus Falls. And we inadvertently counted the money yesterday as new spending, and it's not. So those are the only two changes on the spreadsheet. The other handouts that you have is you have an LGA run dated 3/27. You have a county aid run dated 3/27. And then you have the property tax run statewide, the one that we normally see, and breaking the state out by regions. In the upper right-hand corner, it's dated March 28, 12:38 p.m. Those are the handouts that you have, and I don't think much is going to change there. That's probably what you'll also see on the floor. So, members, if there's no questions, we'll have we're going to take the bill up by article and maybe try to take amendments by article if we can. It would make it a little easier for council. They don't have to be switching back and forth in their areas of expertise if we have Ms. Allen take the articles that are under her purview first and we do amendments to those. And then we'll have Joanne Zoff come up and we'll take the articles under her purview and take amendments to those. So, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 1 is the income tax article. I believe Senator Dibble has an amendment.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the income-1 amendment. This is the Metro Pass issue, members. And if you recall, when this was presented, it had a fiscal note. Well, I have it right here, of like $370,000 in 07, and then tails for go beyond $500,000 in 08 and 09, which I think is a gross overstatement on its face, history proves us that the original fiscal note was grossly overstated by a factor of 3 or 4. Nevertheless, what this amendment does is it confines the kinds of employers that we seek to allow to provide these transit passes. The original intent of the bill was to allow all nonprofits, because for-profit, corporations are allowed to do so through a tax credit mechanism, to just those 501c3. So that takes out the very, very large health plan, health benefit type employers out of the mix and confines it to just a very, very few number of employers. And we think that takes this fiscal note down to about $50,000.
$50,000 per year?
Yeah. I think that's probably what it was going to be anyways. Perhaps even less, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, have you talked with Revenue? Can they kind of give us at least a verbal commitment on that? Mm-hmm. No?
I have not spoken with this is late breaking. We got this pulled together last night. I don't know if Revenue is prepared to respond or not.
Can somebody from Revenue tell us on this Metro bus credit transit pass, this narrowed language that lowers the cost of it any? Mr. Manson, do we have somebody here from Revenue that can tell us about transit pass?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue. I've just first seen this language. I'm not sure if fiscal staff would know if it is. It may lower the cost, but I can call back to the office and see what I can find out in the next few minutes.
Senator Dibble, what was the the fiscal note on the original bill that was introduced?
It was, I can look it up, Mr. Chair, it was like many hundreds, if not into the millions of dollars, and it, you know, it, and the experience has shown that it's only a couple hundred thousand dollars. This is for all private, you know, corporate employers.
Mr. Chair, members, the original bill is introduced, and the fiscal note was dated February 27th, and it was $300,000 in 08-09 and $400,000 in 10 and 11. This did include all insurance companies and credit unions as well as some hospitals, so it did include some fairly large organizations that aren't necessarily 501c3, so it would bring the cost down, although I'm not sure exactly how much. I haven't talked with revenue about that specifically.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I didn't save that. There was a fiscal note from, you know, the years past when this concept was first introduced, and I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but I do remember it was, you know, it was out of proportion to what the experience has been.
Senator Dibble, I mean, I support the concept, but I'm a little uncomfortable not having a fiscal note on it to know how much it costs to put it in. I mean, we start going down this path, I'm afraid there's quite a stack of amendments here. This bill's not quite in balance now, but we're trying to raise some money tomorrow in this committee to put the whole state budget in balance, and I don't know how many more amendments that cost money are going to be here, but it's difficult without a fiscal note on, so that Ms. Von Mosch can carry a number. On the Dibble income-1 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail. A1 is not adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Langseth?
You're taking amendments, right?
We're taking amendments on the income tax article.
Okay.
Do you have any others on the income tax? Any other members have any amendments on the income tax article? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an oral amendment. Not the right article. Article 1, Department Income and Franchise Taxes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, those are from the department articles. We're just doing Article 1 of income tax, not department articles. We'll get to those, though.
There's two of them that say Article 1.
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of any amendments to the federal update, which is Article 2.
Any amendments, members, to Article 2, the federal update?
And then Article 3 would be corporate income tax.
Any amendments to the corporate income tax article? I don't see any. Council?
The next article would be, excuse me, Article 4, sales and use tax. There are a few amendments I'm aware of for that. I believe Senator Pogemiller has one.
Chairman?
Senator Pogemiller?
I have sales 3.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, this is already being carried on the budget sheet, but it's language that was in the transportation bill for sales tax exemption for the commuter rail project, and it was in the transportation bill as it left this committee, but apparently in further discussions, you and Senator Murphy decided that it should be carried in this bill, so it was deleted on the Senate floor. And so we need to get the language into this bill. And as I understand it, the budget sheet already reflects the, I think it's about $7.5 million one-time money.
7.7. Mr. Schreiber here.
Mr.
Does anybody want to testify on the sales tax exemption for commuter rail? Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I see it in the budget sheet. Senator Pogemiller, it seems to me that this was part of I think the governor had this as well, but he also had the highway bonding and construction for roads exemption. And if our finance person might be able to tell us how much that one was, I'd sure like to compare that to what we've come up with the $7.7 million, if that number's available.
Maybe one of the Transportation Committee members knows. I don't know all the pieces here.
I'm sorry, the question is how much was the exemption for the highway construction? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember
I don't know.
Either.
No.
Senator Pogemiller, council tells me that on line 1.5, we need to delete the words and light rail. So that it applies just to commuter rail. So if you'd incorporate that.
That'd be fine.
Senator Pogemiller incorporates on line 1.5, delete and light rail. Continue the sentence.
Mr. Chair, maybe the Department of Revenue could answer the question about the governor's bill, if they're available.
Somebody from Revenue, can they talk about what would have been the cost of exempting highway construction inputs? And I believe, Senator Ortman, that was not carried in the transportation bill.
It was not, Mr. Chair. I don't recall it being in there. I know that it was in the governor's tax bill, in addition to the one that Senator Pogemiller is talking about today. And I think Mr. Mansom is here, and I'm wondering if he looks like he's looking for that information, Mr. Chair. So.
Mr. Manson?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, the governor did have in his tax bill the exemption for the commuter rail construction materials and equipment, and the number was $7.7 million for the biennium. And then he also had an exemption for purchases for the from the Trunk Highway Fund for the Department of Transportation. And that was about $8.7 million in this biennium.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to amend early Senator Pogemiller's amendment to add the $8.7 million for the highway construction trunk highways using the language from the governor's bill. Mr. Chair, and if I could speak in favor of, in support of my own motion here.
Well, Senator Ortman, council has to get caught up with this here. I think we're working a little bit too much on the fly. Why don't we give you an opportunity to come back to this? Let's adopt Senator Pogemiller's amendment. We'll give you an opportunity to come back and with an amendment to do what you want to do. I think we accomplished the same thing, whether we do an amendment or actually a clean amendment. We have to make sure council knows what we're actually incorporating here.
Mr. Chair, I ask the indulgence of the chair, but I apologize for offering that on the fly. I didn't realize that this language was going to be offered as an amendment today. So, but I would prefer if we just set aside the amendment, if Senator Pogemiller would be willing to just set it aside so we could have this discussion all together. I would appreciate that.
Well, Senator Roman, I don't have a problem coming back to this article, and we could have council actually prepare the language we need to include the governor's state highway sales tax exemption. I'd be happy to consider it, but I think we should have the language in front of us.
Mr. Chair, I agree we should have the language in front of us. I'm just saying it would be hard for me to support Senator Pogemiller's amendment without also adding the language for the trunk highways, and I'd like to have that conversation all at once if that's possible. I don't want to oppose his amendment at this time until we can have the whole conversation.
Senator Ortman, Senator Pogemiller, let's lay sales three aside and give Senator Ortman a chance to work on an amendment to it. I think Senator Ortman, that's fine.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Pogemiller withdraws sales-3 for now, members. We're going to come back to that one. And, Senator Ortman, if you could work on some language with council so that we all know what we're voting on in the form of an amendment to the three amendments. Senator Pogemiller offers the sales-2 amendment.
for that one. Instead of hoping for this one.
And members, what this does is, if we have any money left on the bottom line in the tax bill, what this would do is put that money to buy back the June accelerated sales tax shift. I think the business community should probably like this. So once the spreadsheet is all done, if there's some money left on the bottom line, rather than just carry it on the bottom line, I think the tax committee in the past has tried to buy back shifts with that money. So what the number's blank because we don't know exactly what the overall budget number is, but the intent here is if there's some money left, we would buy back the June accelerated sales tax shift. Everybody, council tells me that's all it does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's what it does.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The sales-2 is adopted.
Mr. Chair, those are all the sales tax amendments I'm aware of.
We'll come back to the three amendments for you, Senator Ortman, later.
Thank you. And then to move on to the, excuse me, the department bills. Not aware of any other amendments other than Senator Johnson wanted to offer an oral amendment to the fifth article of the department bill.
Department.
Okay.
So which article is this? The department income tax. Members, that's Article 1, the Department Income and Franchise Taxes article. And Senator Ortman, the page you're referring to? Or did I say Ortman? Johnson, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's on the last page, 102, Council.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's correct.
Oh, I lost, now I've lost my, oh, here it is. It popped off. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, by oral amendment, this doesn't cost anything, take out lines 102.27 to 103.3. This was just clarification language that the department wanted to put into law to explain how their giving money to the Firefighter Relief Association. Currently, it does go to the municipalities and then on to the Relief Association. But since 2001, the firefighters have tried to get it directly into the Relief Association so that they don't have to file sales reports to get it. The problem and the reason the language is here is because the associations have to provide a sales, a federal permit number for the money, and not all of them have gotten them and used them. My concern is if we put this into law, it's just going to confuse the matter. So the department said they'd work on this with finance and try and clean it up, get the associations on board, get them to get their permit numbers.
Well, Senator Johnson, when I look at the language, it says the Commissioner of Revenue shall reimburse the Relief Association by paying it to the municipality. And then on lines 102.29, it says the municipal treasurer shall transmit the reimbursement to the Relief Association. I mean, I think the transfer is happening. I don't think the municipality has any choice under the law to transfer to the Relief Association. So I don't think we're trying to pull it. I don't think the department's trying to pull a quick one here.
No, Mr. Chairman, and I would agree. The shell makes it so. And the department doesn't care. They're going to write the check anyway. But I have every year firefighters saying we want it directly in our Relief Association, but they're not doing the necessary paperwork. So right now it's going to the municipalities.
And, Senator Johnson, what's the municipality doing with the money?
Sometimes they don't know until they're explained to by the department where the money goes. But now they do give it on to the Relief Association. The Relief Association has to do a sales report to get it.
Mr. Manson? Or somebody from the department? This is a department provision. Just wondering if we can alleviate Senator Johnson's concerns here.
So they would not create a number for us to pay unless the Relief Association provided the taxpayer ID number. We had substantial trouble trying to get the Relief Association to provide their taxpayer ID numbers.
Senator Johnson, I think the problem is if the department was really following the law, the finance wouldn't be cutting any checks to some of these relief associations, and they wouldn't get the money at all. So I think the department is just trying to make sure that the relief associations actually can get the money.
And, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you. I'm just afraid if we put this into law, then we're going to have to, when the firefighters do come on board and say, we want this directly in our relief association, we're going to have to then do statute to undo it.
Is Mr. Zickman or anybody from the Firemen's Association here? The department know, or does the Firemen's Association support the language in the bill? Or do they oppose it, or have they expressed any concerns?
Mr. Chair, I don't think we've heard an overall message. I know we do receive calls from different relief associations that lender of the process and why it goes through the municipalities. Because not every relief association receives a supplemental benefit reimbursement payment every year. Every year we have new relief associations that are going to figure out why they explain to these municipalities. But I haven't heard any message from the associations.
Mr. Manson?
Same here, Senator, Mr. Chair. This proposal's kind of been out there a long time. I haven't heard anything directly from the associations. Senator Johnson was kind of the first to raise it with us. And Mr. Chairman, maybe I could just add, this is our current practice, and you kind of heard about why we have to do it this way. Otherwise, like 50% of the associations won't get the money directly in. But we're willing to, if the committee wants to pull this out of the bill, and we can try and work something during the interim and come back next year with a different proposal, or maybe the same thing. But we're just trying to clarify it, getting it out there so the cities know what this payment is for, and that what they're supposed to do is transfer it within 30 days, et cetera. So
Mr. Manson, this reinforces current practice?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
On the Johnson motion to delete lines 102.27 to 103.3 and renumber. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Finally, Mr. Chair, the miscellaneous article. I believe Senator Scoy has an amendment for that.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, I have the property tax one amendment.
Actually, I was referring to miscellaneous one.
Oh, miscellaneous, I'm sorry. Miscellaneous one.
You have one for that too, Senator Scoy?
I have one for that too. I would move the miscellaneous one amendment. And Mr. Chair and Council, I do have an oral amendment to the amendment on line 13 after the word filed.
This is a miscellaneous.
I would like to insert, and a federal tax of at least $1 is due. And Mr. Chair and members, this amendment deals with the federal estate tax and the state's ability to have a different valuation than the federal does. It causes problems if this is ongoing. The Bar Association brought this to me and worked with the department, and I think with the oral amendment, everybody is okay with this amendment.
Senator Scoy, does this cost anything?
No, Mr. Chair. I don't believe this would have any cost. This would only deal with if the state was going to have a different valuation on the estate tax than the federal government.
Does the department have any concerns with this? Can they tell me if this costs any money?
Mr. Chairman, the whole idea behind this provision is that we've got different thresholds for Minnesota versus federal estate tax purposes, so there's kind of this little gap where the feds won't be interested in looking at the valuations at all because it has no revenue impact for them, whereas we have the lower threshold. We need to kind of do our own independent appraisals because they won't be looking at those situations. So this, we're comfortable with this language as it was modified by us to just say that it has to be filed and there has to be an actual tax liability so that the IRS will look at it. So
Okay. If
they look at it, our intention is not to now revisit the issue for evaluation and expend more resources looking at it. So once they look at it, we accept their valuation. But there is this little gap we're trying to get at where we need to do our independent appraisal, and we're fine with the amendment, Mr. Chair.
On the Scoy motion to adopt the miscellaneous dash one amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The miscellaneous dash one is adopted. Senator Moi moves the miscellaneous dash three. Members, this just makes it clear that yesterday the Senate passed Senator Pogemiller's bill on the budget reserve. We're also carrying the budget reserve in the tax bill. So this just makes it clear that that we don't have to count it twice, that if Senator Pogemiller's bill is enacted into law, that then we don't count that in our state budget and then also count the budget reserve that's carried in the tax bill. It's the same number. It's a $629 million increase. This just makes it clear that it's not counted in both bills if both bills are passed into law.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, does that $629 million show up on our spreadsheet?
Counsel?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, yes, I believe it does. Perhaps Ms. Von Mosch can tell us what line it is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, the budget reserve is on page 4, the top of page 4, lines 105 and 106, including the interest. We have it on the spreadsheet, but it is not included in the calculations. It's not included in our bottom line. It's included as part of the omnibus spreadsheet to show what tax-related provisions passed in other bills, and so it isn't part of our math in the spreadsheet. Although, Mr. Chair, let me correct that a little bit. The interest is shown on page 2, line 58. We do recognize the interest as non-tax dedicated earnings. We are counting the interest as revenues, but but the finance spreadsheet is carrying the $629 million.
Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if Ms. Von Mosch could tell us then how much the total bill is on this, on the entire group of bills that makes up Senate File 1024 when we include the 629 and the interest.
The bottom line for our bill is reflected in line 101 on page 3.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, that's not my question. My question is, we raise some revenues in this bill, and we also spend. We have expenditures, and I'm wondering what the total of expenditures is when you add in the 629 and the $33
million. Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, looking at it that way, we would be looking at line 101, where we're leaving a negative $88 million for 08-09. And you would take that, and you would count in the 629. That is actually looking at it as a broader finance related issue.
Mr. Ehrman, I don't think it's quite fair to count putting $629 million into the budget reserve as spending.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that we could argue about that, but I don't think there's any need to do that. We would disagree. I think
if most families, if they sit down at their kitchen table and decide they're going to take some money off their check and put it into their savings account, they don't think of it as having spent the money.
But it's out of their budget.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand your point of view. We're going to be saving this money, but when we're spending three times over that altogether, I hardly call it savings. We've discussed this on the Senate floor, and I don't know that we need to go back through the debate again. But in my view, this looks like spending the taxpayers' dollars for sure.
Sir Ehrman, do you agree that we shouldn't have to count the money twice, which is what the Dash 3 amendment does, says that if you think of it as spending, we shouldn't count it as spending in the tax bill and then count it again as spending in the bill to pass the Senate floor, Senator Pogemiller's bill? Because that's what the amendment does, says you can't count it twice.
Mr. Chair, I don't oppose the amendment. I want to make sure we only spend it one time, but you and I agree now that we're spending the money and we're only going to spend it one time. But I'm still trying to get the number that shows me how much revenue we are dealing with this bill. And I don't have the answer to that yet, but maybe Ms. Von Mosch and I can work on that over the course of the next few minutes.
On Senator Moy's motion on the miscellaneous .-3 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chair, those are the only ones I'm aware of.
Any other amendments for the miscellaneous article? Senator Langsa?
Well, mine is miscellaneous.
Okay.
I think it's property tax.
Okay, we're good.
The next articles.
Can you pick up the property tax one?
Oh, okay. Where would Joanne want to start?
Has to do with property tax. This would be into the property tax.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Going to do that next.
Where do you want to start?
Going to do property tax.
Sure. Members, we'll take up Article 5, the property tax article. Senator Langseth moves Prop-3.
Mr. Chairman, this has been in the Senate tax bill for the last two times. I think it deals with land which has aggregate. And the way it is now, if that aggregate isn't coming off the land, it's still taxed as commercial industrial. What this would do is say it won't be taxed as commercial industrial until the aggregate begins being removed. And I believe it's the same language as been in the bill before, but Fred Corrigan is here if you've got any questions about it. But it's been in the tax bill before.
Senator Scoy, is this okay?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I remember this discussion from last year, and this is an effort to preserve the aggregate resource, and I think it's a good amendment.
Any other questions from members? On Langseth's Prop 2019-3 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, the Prop 2 amendment. Well, it's being handed out, Mr. Chair. This would add to the list of those sorts of open space, recreational active use type activities that are carried out on those sorts of properties, soccer. There were a number of other items that were brought forward in a bill introduced, a late-breaking bill introduced by Senator Jen Olson that didn't get a full hearing, and so we confined the amendment to just adding soccer to the list of those things that we treat similar to golf, skiing, lawn bowling, croquet, polo, archery, or firearms range recreational use. I think the larger goal of the policy is to encourage private development of lands like this that would not otherwise occur or have to be provided primarily by governmental, municipal soccer fields and the like. It's to encourage private development of soccer fields.
Senator Dibble, you're aware that by doing this, putting soccer fields into the same tax category as golf courses, where there will be some tax shifting that goes on because that burden gets shifted to other classes of property. I think it's probably pretty small, but Senator Scoia?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, the only question I would have is are there private soccer fields around? I mean, that this would affect, because this would be for private soccer fields. And, I mean, I'm not from the area that has a lot of soccer played, so I'm not familiar with that. But
Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Scoia just answered my question. There would be a huge impact if the National Sports Center were involved, but if this is just for private soccer fields.
Just for soccer fields that pay property taxes, Senator Johnson.
Maybe we should, Mr. Chair, look at the tax structure of the National Sports Center then.
Does the department know if the National Sports Center up in Blaine plays, is it in Blaine, Senator Johnson? They pay, I've been there. My son was in a state track meet there.
Was he running?
He didn't. Yes, he wasn't running. Okay? He was throwing the disc at Senator.
Tell Senator.
The department know the National Sports Center up in Blaine is subject to property taxes?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it is either.
Department doesn't know or doesn't think so.
The state owns it.
Yeah.
It's a state.
I'm not aware. No.
Mr. Chair, the state owns it, so I don't think we pay any tax.
I guess I'd be surprised if it is, Senator Johnson. I tell you what, Senator Johnson, if it is subject to property taxes and there'd be some shifting going on, I think Senator Dibble and I would be willing to reconsider. I mean, that would be a pretty big hit for Anoka County, I would think. So you have my word that if they are subject to property tax and all that shifting goes on, that we'd take another look at it.
Thank you.
We'll also have to speak with Senator Jen Olson.
And
I'm her champion.
Chair.
Senator Scoia.
Mr. Chair, the other thing I think we might want to look into is to make sure that, who's using these soccer fields, if they're privately owned, are they open to the public? What's going on there? Was it a possibility that this land is, they're just putting a couple goals up, calling it a soccer field, and holding it for development? So I think we'll take a little look at this as it's moving along.
Senator Sandrum.
Mr. Chair, we have a private, I don't know if these are unusual or not, a private indoor soccer arena in Rochester where the kids play in the winter and so on and so forth. Certainly, and I'm looking at item B there, it's certainly not 5 acres in size, so I don't think that would be affected, but the indoor, I don't know if ours are unique or not, but they do exist.
5 acres would be a pretty big roof.
Pretty big. It's not 5 acres, no.
On the Prop 2 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The Prop 2 is adopted. Senator Bill. Dibble, tell Senator Olson you've carried her water for her today.
Indeed.
She'll be happy. I don't know if she'll be happy enough to vote for the bill, but she'll be happy that her amendment's on. Anything else in the property tax article?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Squire.
I have a Prop-1 amendment. And while this is being passed out, members, this was brought to me recently by the Assessors Association. There evidently was a situation where a homestead dwelling was destroyed by arson by someone other than the owner, and the county didn't have any mechanism to abate any of the property taxes. This would allow the, it's permissive, would allow the county to abate the property taxes if the property was destroyed by arson or vandalism, if it was someone other than the owner.
Senator Squire, where'd you get this idea? Good idea.
Well, as I said, Steve Kuhl from the assessors brought this to me, and they ran into a situation where it was an issue, so I thought we could.
Seems reasonable. I'm surprised we don't already provide for that. But on the Prop-1, members, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy, this was your division.
Well, you know, it's been a long time since we rolled the article out, so there's been some activity in the intervening time. I have the Prop-6 amendment, and I think that there is Ms. Geis from Scott County to help me walk through this amendment, but I do have an oral amendment to offer to it before we go through it. On page 3, line 11, I would like to strike the new word entire.
Senator Skoy incorporates on line 3.11, delete the new language.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly walk through this, and then if there's questions, Ms. Geis can help me. The first provision is an increase to the value that is attached to a manufactured home. This would be like a deck or a porch attached to a trailer house, that they have some opportunity to increase the market value for taxation. Section 29 is a provision increasing the amount that the counties can use for the ability of commercial industrial to have a confessment of judgment on. Section 30 and 32, I believe, 30 and 31, they work together, and they allow the PTR to be transferred to the county to used for delinquent taxes. And I think that the subsection C there is striking the county's accelerated June payment, and I think Ms. Geis will probably add some more meat to that very thin bone.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Geis. I'm the Scott County Auditor, and I also represent the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I'm on their legislature, and these amendments came through from that committee. I'm bringing them forward, and we'll be going to answer any additional questions that you have. Just a little bit of a brief background. I was manufactured home area. We were generating tax bills of $2. And just the cost of collecting those types of small taxes, the cost far exceeded the benefit, and we thought that at least if we could improve or increase the cost of the improvement cost, that maybe a generation of a higher tax bill and those smaller structures would not be taxed, and therefore would at least decrease the burden on us to try to collect those bills. The second amendment to the Class 3A, like Senator Skoey, we have property owners who own property that's commercial, industrial, and type, and we have had no increase in that base value for such a long period of time that some of these smaller commercial, industrial property owners' values have gone up, but they still haven't entered into a confession of judgment. On the next provision, we are unable to take partial payments on delinquent taxes. People have to pay them in full, or they have to enter into confession of judgment. So in February when we get a payment of $500, the taxes are $600, we have to return it. This provision, by striking the word entire, would allow us to take any type of payment on those delinquent taxes, and the property tax refund would go hand in hand with that, whereas if they were eligible for a property tax refund, however, we're not going to be able to have one granted to them because of delinquent taxes, that provision would allow us to take those tax payments and apply them toward their delinquent taxes. The final provision on the accelerated June payments, back in 2003 when the budget deficit was on everybody's minds, there was a provision enacted that accelerated the June payment to help offset some of those deficits. Now that the time has passed, the counties were asking for that accelerated estimated June payment to be stricken from the language and for us to just go back to our regular month-to-month submission of organ registration and deed tax to the state.
Ms. Geis, is there a cost to the a one-time cost to the state of that June acceleration?
There would be a one-time cost. Currently on June 20th, the counties are remitting all of the May collections and then an estimation of what the June collections are in June. And then in July, they would just be getting the remainder of that. So we would be pushing that June accelerated back to the July 20th due date, like all of the other monthly remissions are.
Mr. Chair, with that information, what I'd like to do is not include the striking of the current law on page 3, line 27 through 30. I think we'll leave that as it stands. And then I do have a question for Ms. Geis. If you have the amendment there, if you would look on page 3, line 12, the word entire appears again. Do we need to strike that also? There's, Mr. Chair, Ms. Geis, there's two entires in that paragraph, one on line 11 and one on line 12. Do we need to get rid of the second entire also?
That would be correct.
So I would incorporate those changes.
Senator Marty?
No, that was.
I think we're getting a little too far, I think, for an incorporation. Senator Scoy moves. On line 3.11, delete the word entire. 3.12, delete the word entire. And then delete lines, delete section C, lines 3.27 to 3.3, and reinsert the old language.
Actually, you just take that section, section 31. There's nothing else. That's a separate section.
Okay, council suggests this, delete section 31. To do this, accomplish the same thing and entire on lines 11 and 12. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. On the Prop 6 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Prop 6 is adopted. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I have two. The first one is the Prop 5.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a language that was brought to me by Senator Gimsey, and I think that he's in the room if we wanted to put him on the spot. But what this does is it treats restaurants that are seasonal just like other seasonal businesses in the property tax. And I don't believe that there is any kind of a state impact here, but Senate Council can advise us about that.
There's a small amount of tax shifting that would go on in a taxing jurisdiction that has a seasonal restaurant. But, Senator Ortman, if I ask Senator Gimsey to come to the table, I'm going to ask him if we put this on, if he'll vote for the tax bill.
Well, let's not invite Senator Gimsey to the table, and let's just vote on the amendment then, Mr. Chair. I don't want to put him on the spot.
Members, I think that's a reasonable request. We give this reduction to seasonal resorts. I think if we have some seasonal restaurants, it's kind of the same issue. On Prop 5, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Prop 5 is adopted. Senator Gimsey, going to vote for the tax bill? Or is it slipped out?
Crafty.
That's a reasonable request.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I did have another one. It's an oral one that I've spoken with Senate counsel about. It's an easy one. We're deleting a section. I'd like to delete section 22, which is on page 16 of the property tax article. And what that is the expansion of the personal property tax that affects our energy companies in the state of Minnesota disproportionately. And I know that they were here to testify before, but there was some clear misunderstanding about their position in the committee prior. And I'm wondering if we couldn't please give them an opportunity to testify and clarify the record. I believe Ms. McKiernan is here from Xcel Energy, and she'd be willing to testify in support of this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman, if we do it, this is Senator Murphy's bill. So I think Senator Murphy would not be happy if we took this out, but somebody in the audience like to testify on the Ortman amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Joe Reinberger. I work with the tax department of Xcel Energy. Thank you for giving me the time to speak with you on your agenda. I'm here to speak in opposition to Section 22 on page 16 of the property tax article. Section 22 increases property tax rates in order to continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate valuations. This seems to be, to us, to be inconsistent with the state's tax policy goals of uniformity, equity, and transparency. It reverses the past 14 years of state tax policy decisions to not expand the personal property tax, which was phased out for other industries in the 1970s. We are invested in our communities, and we want to pay our fair share of taxes. However, cities and counties with utility property do receive extra compensation. It's the personal property tax, which utilities pay in addition to the tax on their real property. For instance, in 2006, Xcel paid $30 million statewide in real property taxes, land and buildings, and it paid an additional $80 million for personal property in the communities that are seeking this rate increase. This bill also sends utility customer revenues to communities whose tax bases are growing. Capital investments at our plants alone in the next few years will add $270 million to the tax base in Monticello, $630 million to the tax base in Red Wing, and $325 million to the tax base in Becker. We have been working with our communities to mitigate the effect of the valuation correction. We opted to correct it through a participatory rulemaking process rather than challenging our assessments annually in tax court. We supported the 3-year phase-in of the corrected valuation rule. We supported the transition aid in the governor's budget. We initiated revenue stabilization agreements to keep our mostly significant affected communities whole for a period of 10 years. However, we believe it is reasonable to ask that our property be accurately assessed by the state, and we oppose increasing property taxes in order to continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate valuation. Mr. Chair, members, that concludes my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. We had pretty compelling testimony in the property tax division with regard to this from the residents of these communities that this was a reasonable response and that the shifting that's going on from their neighbors in their communities onto their homeowners was not fairly being distributed, and they were putting up with all the inconveniences of having these in their hometowns, their host towns, and I would oppose the Ortman Amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, we don't like to shift property taxes to homeowners. I agree with Senator Scoy. The problem with this, and I think there is a misunderstanding here, is that the taxes that they were paying over the several years were overvaluations of their property, and so they were overpaying taxes. They're good community members and great state partners, as they've testified, but they were overpaying. And now that they've corrected the valuation, the communities are saying, don't stop with the amount of revenues we're generating from Excel. They want to continue the amount. But what we've been trying to do is correct this valuation. So I think that it's very unfair to say, well, we need this revenue stream and we don't want you to shift to the homeowners, when it's all based on that flawed valuation of the property value. No property owner, whether they be a corporation or a resident, should have to pay taxes on misvalued, incorrectly valued property. And that's what this is about. And we need to correct that. I'm sure that those residents were very compelling. But we also need to be fair in our tax policy. And if we've overtaxed, we can't just say, well, we need the income, so we're going to continue to support a stream that we've been overtaxing for all these many years. And I think this is our chance to correct this. I know that Senator Murphy supports this, but I think that this is the only fair and proper way to handle this very good state partner.
Senator Scoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, overvalued and fair. 1998 utility taxes down 6.9%. 1999 down 5%. 2000 up 0.1%. 2001 down 1.7%. 2002 down 17.8%. 2003 down 1.1%, 2004 up 0.4%, 2005 down 1.1%, 2006 down 1.6%, and 2007 down up 1.2%, estimated 2008 without this change down 2.6%. Well, if you add this up and compound the reductions that they've had, I think we're just taking a very small step back. This seems like they've had significant property tax reductions the last decade or more, and the homeowners in their communities have been going up double digit. Doesn't seem fair. So we're making an effort to do a small little readjustment.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair. Our whole property tax system is based on valuation, not outcome. We don't tax people because we want a certain revenue stream. We don't say, well, we need to generate a certain number of revenue, so we don't care what the valuation of the property is, and we're just going to impose a tax amount because that suits our city budget or our county budget. We go by valuation, and that's the difference here, is that in this case, the valuation was wrong. And so we shouldn't be adjusting to say we need that level of income. Let's go back to what's fair. And I would say that this is not a small impact on Excel, and hopefully Mr. Reinberger could testify a little bit about what the impact really is here.
No, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, part of the property taxes is value. The other part is class rate. And we are adjusting the class rate so that we don't have this shifting going on the homeowners in these communities. And I think it's reasonable.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do hope that Mr. Reinberger can testify further just for a moment, but I would say that's true, Senator Scoy, except we have taken a position in the state not to expand the personal property tax. And so this is even against our own policy not to do that. We're expanding the personal property tax here. And I don't think anybody wants to see that. There's justification here because we want the outcome. We want the dollars as opposed to what's fair. And we should treat corporate partners no differently than we would a homeowner. We wouldn't say we need to generate a certain amount of property tax based on at this property because we need to justify our city's budget. We do the opposite. But I hope that Mr. Reinberger can testify very, very briefly about the impact that this will have.
Mr. Reinberger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the impact of the current provisions totals up to be $32 million. And that is $20 million due to the class rate increase and $12 million attributable to the repeal of the exemption that we currently have on the generation machinery. So the 20 and the 12 would be an impact of an annual impact of $32 million under the current valuation.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Reinberger, will that end up in rate increases? I mean, how will XL deal with the fact they're going to have to incorporate this huge change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, indeed, those increased taxes will be a component in our next rate case.
Senator Scoia.
Well, to that point, this would be a 10.8% increase. And in 2002, you had a 17.8% decrease. Was that reflected in the rate decline?
I believe what happened there is that we gave some of the relief back immediately. Percentage, Senator Scoia, I'm not real sure. But the rest of it was reflected in decreased taxes in our next rate case.
Did the rate per kilowatt hour ever go down?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the exact numbers on that. But it was, but those decreased taxes were reflected as a component in the next rate case, in addition to giving back some of that relief immediately.
Senator Scoia, it would be nice to know if the rate per kilowatt hour ever went down when somebody was given a 17.8 or 9% reduction.
Three, yeah.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think there's one more thing that the committee should know before we vote on this bill, and that's, I'm hoping Mr. Reinberger can explain it, but my understanding is that XL Energy has been negotiating settled outcomes for the misvaluation of their property through several of the communities, and there were just some communities that they did not reach a settlement with, but they are negotiating in good faith with many communities around the state, and I was wondering if you could address that issue, Mr. Reinberger.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, yes, we have. We have negotiated. We have recognized the impact, despite the phase-in of the rule, 20%, 50%, and then 100%. We recognize that rule will have an impact on host communities where essentially we have a lot of property. And where their revenues have been declining. And as a result of that, we have been negotiating revenue stabilization agreements with those communities to make them whole so that whatever change occurs as a result of the rule, they will still be guaranteed a certain stream of income. We do have signed agreements with Goodhue County and the City of Red Wing, and we are in negotiations with Wright County, Sherburne County, the City of Becker, and the City of Monticello.
Senator Scoia.
Mr. Chair, a number of these communities were in committee when we were hearing this bill and they're supportive of the Murphy provision.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, final word on this. This is a good resident of our state. It is negotiating in good faith with communities across the state for stabilization of their revenue stream, despite the fact that they had property that was misvalued, and they are doing the right thing here. I think this is an unnecessary penalty, and it certainly is contrary to our policy not to expand the personal property tax, and it's contrary to a fair property tax system and certainly contrary to our purpose of having these corporate partners negotiating good faith with our cities. I hope the members will support this amendment.
On the Ortman motion to delete Section 22, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
I think that's it for that.
Get back to North Star, Mr. Chairman.
I think.
Thank you so much for that.
Okay. Council? I think, members, anything else in the property tax article? Anybody? Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, just so the committee knows, I have three amendments left. One is to the aid It's the aid one. I have one for the miscellaneous two, but this Senate council actually drafted it, and so I think she's prepared to take that. And then the sales four, which is the one that relates to the sales tax exemption that Senator Pogemiller offered earlier.
So I think, members, that concludes the amendments for the property tax article. And we'll go to the miscellaneous article. Who's got miscellaneous down? Hartman moves miscellaneous dash 2. Senator Ortman, what are we trying to do with dash 2?
Mr. Chair, this is a language that was brought to the Senate by Senator Dill. He's trying to work out revenue recapture for the revenue recapture program, and I'm hoping that Senate Council can talk about this. It allows a city to have a claim, not just the hospital or library or ambulance service, but it allows a charter city to maintain a claim.
Council?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman's explanation is correct. Under current law, revenue recapture is the process by which the revenue department, if a claim is filed with the revenue department by a claimant agency, they are able to deduct money that would otherwise be refunded to a taxpayer in order to satisfy a claim that's brought in by a claimant agency. This would broaden the ability of a statutory or home rule charter city to present claims. Currently, they can only present claims related to a municipal hospital or library or ambulance service.
Gives them out at his golf tournament.
Senator Senjum, you're a former city council member. What do you think about expanding revenue recapture?
I would support Senator Dill's bill. It's a good idea.
Senator Pogemiller?
What's the department think?
Mr. Manson? Senator Ortman, do you know, did Senator Dill ever have this in a bill?
Mr. Chair, yes. My understanding, it was in a bill, but I'm not sure he got a hearing on it. I'm not sure what happened there, but I think it makes sense to have this in the property tax. I can't imagine it's got a very big impact. But it makes sense that if the city does have revenue that they can recapture, that we allow them to do it. If we would allow them to do it for their hospital or for their library, I'm not sure why we wouldn't allow them to do it for the city, for any other claim, Mr. Chair.
Department have anything to say on this? Good, bad, otherwise? It doesn't seem unreasonable to me. On the miscellaneous dash 2, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yes. Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair.
So you have another one on the miscellaneous article? Or?
I don't. I have one on the aid article, and we have the sales amendment that Senator Pogemiller talked about earlier.
Anybody else have anything on the miscellaneous article? Okay, where do you want to go?
AIDS.
AIDS
and credits.
AIDS and credits article. Who's moving the aid dash one? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, the 8-1 deals with the Mall of America. And the Mall of America was here asking for tax increment financing authority for the expansion of the Mall of America. And the city of Bloomington is supportive, and they say that they want the tax increment financing approved. They were here yesterday. Senator Larson offered the referendum, which was turned down by this committee. But I think that 8-1 makes some sense. What it does is it says that if the Mall of America wants to do tax increment financing, they will not be receiving LGA from the state of Minnesota. The justification or rationale for this is that the city of Bloomington has never received LGA from the state of Minnesota. But the LGA run that we have today would expand the scope of LGA, as I've said. It's got cities in there that haven't even asked to be included in LGA. And in the run, if you look at Hennepin County, you'll find that for the first time ever, the city of Bloomington would receive $295,000 in our 2008 payment. And I don't believe that a city that is going to shift the property tax revenues to homeowners by taking the retail property off the tax rolls with the tax increment financing option should be asking for tax relief in the form of LGA. And we've talked about that a little bit in the committee. I'm hoping this committee will recognize, I don't even think the city of Bloomington was asking for LGA, but if they're going to ask for TIF authority, we shouldn't also be supplementing their city budget through LGA. And this just says, as long as there's a TIF district in existence, they're not going to receive any LGA. I hope the members of this committee will support this condition.
Senator Ortman, Senator Larson couldn't be here today. Could you give his testimony on the amendment for us? What would Senator Larson say?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to mischaracterize Senator Larson, but I know he's not in favor of the TIF. And so this would be a limitation on the TIF authority and a protection of the homeowners in that district, it seems to me. Or I guess maybe I shouldn't speculate because he might have the opposite point of view. But I think that he is opposed to the Mall of America. I think that if they're going to come here to the state and ask for help, we should make sure they're not asking for LGA in addition to that assistance.
Senator Orban, would you be more comfortable commenting on how you think Senator Blanger might view this? We don't want to do anything that Senator Blanger doesn't approve of. He was a long-serving member on this committee. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I share your sentiments about the Mall of America project, and I strongly oppose the tax increment financing. I think if this would have the impact of stopping it, I'd say great, but I think this is going to punish the people who the city is deciding to shift stuff to already, so I'm not enthused about this, but I agree with you about what the city's doing and making decisions that they're not going to be paying. Their kids are going to be paying, actually, for most of the extension of the TIF. But I'm not sure this makes it. I don't think this is going to change what the city is going to do. I think it's just going to hit their property owner.
Senator Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with Senator Marty. First of all, this is a based on an 03 tax run, so they haven't requested it, and $296,000, whatever it is quite a low amount of LGA, so it's not going to impact what they do with the Mall of America. I think that the city of Bloomington's here, and I think that they probably would like some input on the amendment. The
mayor is here. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this really isn't dealing with the TIF district. I just want to be accurate that Bloomington in 2003 did receive $295,000 worth of LGA. That's what they received, so it's not like they've never received LGA before.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to make a similar point. I think Bloomington was on the formula over the years, not every year, but when LGA was first instituted, I think Bloomington was on the formula. So I just don't think it's accurate to say Bloomington's never gotten LGA.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the correction. It was my understanding that they had not because they contribute so heavily to the fiscal disparities. I think that maybe offsets. But nonetheless, I'm hoping to persuade Senators Marty and Pogemiller and Johnson here that by putting this condition on the Mall of America tax increment financing, we will be protecting residents in other areas of the state, not Bloomington, but their city council will stand accountable for the decision that they're making on the tax increment financing. But to you, Senator Marty, we're going to be raising income taxes to pay for LGA and business property taxes. And I don't think that we should be doing that. And if, to the extent that we're going to do that, this would make those funds available for other communities that have needs and are not taking major pieces of valuable property off their property tax rolls and then also getting aid from the state to do that. And so this is a protection for all the rest of the community that would either get those dollars through LGA or would have to pay more income taxes to support the TIF decision by the city of Bloomington.
Sir Marty, and then we're going to see if the mayor of Bloomington wants to say anything.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I'd strongly support an amendment of yours to strike Section 20 of Article 8, the TIF provision, because I'm convinced the Mall of America property has got to be about the most desirable piece of real estate for developers in the upper Midwest, and we're giving it a tax advantage, a tax subsidy. I don't think we should be doing that, but I know I represent at least one city that does a ton of this, too, for commercial property, and I don't think you should punish the residents of that community for some, I'd say, poor decisions that are being made by their government.
Senator Sundrum?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to speak in opposition to my my dear friend, Senator Ortman, but, to me, tax increment financing is taking that increment, that, you know, that which the property pays now and that which the property will take then. You take that increment, you apply it to the project, a project that would never happen but for tax increment financing. So you take that increment, you apply it to the project for 20 years. The project gets built. After 20 years, the full tax blossoms and it's available for the community. It's the only development tool I know that we have in certainly Rochester and Bloomington and anywhere else in Minnesota. And I just don't think it's appropriate to penalize a city's LGA by virtue of the fact that they're trying to move their community and state forward. I would suggest if we're going to do this for Bloomington, maybe we should do it for everybody else that has a TIF district, and I don't think that would go very far. And it just seems to me kind of excessive in terms of a penalty for Bloomington.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sundrum, they're not egging people on. I think the but-for test is a big problem. I know can give plenty of examples. I remember Minneapolis a few years ago gave a major downtown TIF to one developer when another one was willing to redevelop the same property without a TIF. Saying but-for the TIF, this wouldn't happen. It's, again, one of the most developable pieces of property in the upper Midwest. I don't support the TIF by any means. I would love to have that removed from the bill, but I'm not sure this is the way to get at it.
Sir Ortman, would you like to withdraw your amendment or have it defeated?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
It seems, Sir Ortman, like you don't have a lot of support at the table.
Mr. Chair, I can read the tea leaves here as well. I honestly think this is the direction we should be going at with TIF. For policy reasons, the city has said and others have said we're not asking for state aid. Well, they're receiving state aid, and so I think that is a fallacy. I still would like to hear from the city of Bloomington to see what they think about this. I'd like to hear their testimony, and then I will either have my amendment defeated or I'll withdraw it if we could hear that testimony.
Mr. Mayor, just briefly, do you support the amendment or not? We don't want to get into a big TIF discussion.
Nor do I, Mr. Chair. Gene Winstead, Mayor of the City of Bloomington. I've heard and understand some of the motivation behind it, but I think when you take a look at LGA and the formulas that have been gonculated and calculated to get to LGA payments to cities and things like that, it was originally designed to be something to help relieve property tax burdens for people in individual cities based on property tax value or property values and things like this. It uses general fund dollars to compensate cities accordingly. Last time I checked, I think the residents of the city of Bloomington were paying their income taxes, paying their sales taxes into the general fund. Through the formulas, have not received LGA for the last few years. I think if the formulas now and they come out of it, the formulas need to be respected, and if Bloomington were to be entitled to receive some LGA funds, I think it is there to help relieve the property taxes in the city of Bloomington. The formula is created. So I think that if you go to tying TIF districts to state LGA funds, if I'm not mistaken, there's more than 2,000 TIF districts in the state of Minnesota, and I think then you'd have to open up that can of worms and start to look at how LGA and TIF were used by every individual city going forward. So I think the two are unrelated, so therefore I would not support this type of amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, it will be my effort in this committee going forward to try and tie them. But with all due respect to the mayor, I'm wondering, if we give you LGA, are you going to extend that to the homeowners, or is that just going to go into the city's budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I think that LGA is something that does get paid to cities. Cities look at their overall budgets, whether it be police, fire, public works, the different things that the cities pay for. It would go in there, and then it would be probably represented and come out in the form of how you levy your taxes through your city budget going forward. So I would say that it would get to the individual tax payer, and it would be reflective in the tax levy of the city of Bloomington.
Mr. Chair, I would withdraw my amendment at this time, and I'm honestly disappointed that the committee does not recognize the relationship between LGA and TIF. But I'm going to try and convince the committee going forward about the relationship.
Senator Ortman withdraws 8-1.
Are those state issues?
Right.
Any other amendments to the aid and credits article? Local development article, Article 8.
Mr. Chairman, you're very close to reminding me of a former long-standing tax chair, because he used to kind of put his glasses down like this as he looked at the committee.
The committee's doing fine, Senator Pogemiller.
Well, I just had a slight flashback there as I was watching. He always surveyed the committee, and his glasses were down.
He made a lot of good decisions over the years. I have to talk nicely about my constituents.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Tindrum?
In the spirit of fun, I just offered my majority leader a new pen, and so he'll be using this throughout the rest of the tax bill.
it's a day for gifts, Senator Tindrum. Senator Skoy got a new coffee cup today. Senator Dibble moves the local 2 amendment. Members, there was some... In the local development article relative to the mall, there was some language in there for labor harmony on the hotels, I believe. Kind of I think it's commonly referred to as neutrality language. We're told by some attorneys smarter than I on these issues that language probably is a little egregious, and we should have something softer than that. So Senator Dibble offers local 2 as substitute language on the neutrality language that's in the bill relative to hotel operations. And this will be a substitute.
In the interest of peace, love, and harmony, Mr. Chair.
Peace, love, and harmony, Senator Dibble. It's a good amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
I'm against this one. Work.
Oh, this is for the mega block.
I wonder if I could get Senator Marty to move a TIF proposal. Maybe I should ask somebody else.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking of some, but they may not be the same direction yours is.
Just so it doesn't get withdrawn, maybe I better ask Senator Skoy, the Property Tax Division Chair, to offer local 1.
Is that why you got a cup? Is that the only way to get that amendment offered, to give him a cup?
He's the division chair in the property tax division. This is a TIF issue. Members, this is some language that was requested by the commissioner of the IRRRB. They would like to create a tax increment district for some development at Giants Ridge. I will tell you straight up, I don't think there's agreement in the whole range delegation that this is a good idea. So I don't know that this will stay in the bill, but Senator Representative Rukavina is aware of this. I don't think he's 100% on board yet, but this is requested by the commissioner at IRB. So
local dash four.
There's not a TIF at Giants Ridge today. This gives them some conditions to create one.
Mr. Chair, it's a local dash four amendment.
Local dash four. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
No. No.
Chair's got good ears.
Timber's here. Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
We have a division. Mr. Chair.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Chair, my question would be.
Senator Johnson?
Whose provision is this?
Did we just give a ski slope? It was Senator Skoy's provision. It's not unlike TIFs we do for other communities.
Well, I understand, Mr. Chairman, but it would be nice to know the authorship.
Senator Skoy offered the.
I move the amendment. My family's long-standing interest in skiing in Minnesota.
And Senator Johnson, Senator Skoy is a member of the Iron Range Resources Board, one of the new members to the board.
New member to the IC. I support the amendment, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Johnson, you grew up in Hibbing?
I did.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ortman.
Was this introduced as a bill?
Senator Ortman, no, it was not. And the reason it was not is the commissioner's office emailed me this request. I can get the email, but I think about 4 or 5 days ago. Commissioner works for the governor, Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, chairman of the tax committee is very powerful. And
we're going to find out in the end where the power is. Anything else for the local...
Mr. Chair, I did have a request for a division, but I will withdraw that at this time in deference to the great chair of the Tax Committee.
Senator Roman, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelman.
I just would caution, and looking through it a little bit, I just would caution if this does move forward, that you wouldn't want to set precedents that you would regret a year later.
Senator Pogelman, there's not agreement on everything in it, and it will be modified if not taken out before we're done. Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the Local 3 Amendment. And this is a, I believe the city of Fridley came before the committee, and I can't recall this, it must be the division, the subdivision, on the full committee on their request for tax increment financing district. They are asking for some changes in the rules. I must say that this is Senator Chaudhry's bill that came before us, and he's not able to be here, but I know that Mr. Hitchcock, who is the community developer director of the city of Fridley, would be willing to answer questions. The amendment apparently is a very pared-down version of the bill. They need to start going on this project in the early summer, and they would like some assistance.
Did you get a break for your phone? So, Senator Moi, this is much smaller than the bill that was in front of the committee, and it does not include the new transit station.
I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I am Scott Hickok, Community Development Director for the City of Fridley. In the pared-down bill, we are really focused on the tunnel that would connect the east and west side of the station site and also potentially some land acquisition, but not the station site itself.
So, Mr. Hitchcock, if the station is never built, will the tunnel still be needed?
Yes, sir, it will. And members of the committee, in Fridley, we have that unique circumstance where we have East River Road, University Avenue, and Highway 65 that are really very important to our community, but they also cut our community into ribbons in terms of cross traffic. And in this particular location, we do have folks that are crossing the rail on the surface because we have such limited east-west
traffic possibilities for pedestrians, bicyclists, and even some folks that want to do business on the other side of the tracks. We think even without North Star, though we hope that North Star is what will happen here, without North Star, it still provides a very, very important link, gets children to schools. Right now, a connection to those kids that are on the west side of East River Road. Some of them actually do dare to walk across on the surface on their way to high school or to the middle school. So we ask that you do give this serious consideration. Certainly, we also feel that it will inspire development around the station site that even, again, without the station site is badly needed for us in Fridley.
Mr. Hitchcock, do kids in Fridley ever play on the railroad tracks?
Well, I do believe so, sir. Whether we like it or discourage it or not, that probably happens.
When I used to walk home from school in the little town of Cook, we used to walk about a quarter mile of track, and it was very dangerous. And I think giving kids an opportunity to stay off of the tracks and get underneath them via a tunnel is probably a good idea.
Thank you, sir. We would agree. The largest rail yard, per se, between Chicago and Seattle is on our southern border and into the southern portion of Fridley. It's a very important rail yard for Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and 70 to 80 trains per day come out of that rail yard. And to think that people might try to cross when there's 70 to 80 trains per day traveling, we just think this is a very critical thing for us in our development future.
Does anybody else want to testify on the Fridley TIF Local Dash 3? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Saramois.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the PH014 amendment. Members of the committee will recall that when we had the Mall America project before this committee, I'd raised some concerns about, first of all, I'm very excited about the phase two of the Mall America development going forward, and I think it is very good for those of us here in the state who are spending money elsewhere for entertainment, and so I'm looking forward to as the phase two progresses, but I did raise a concern about affordability and access for the residents of the state of Minnesota and for the people who live in Bloomington. And so, Mr. Chair and members, the PH014 amendment is language that was also included, I believe, in the Twins bill, and it basically is putting language into the law to just say that as the project moves forward, we should provide affordable access to the amusement areas of the facility for our citizens.
Was something like this contained in the final version of the Twins bill?
I believe it was, Mr. Chair.
How is that done?
I'm all going to be able to make sure that Senator Moi can afford to bring her family to the amusements at the facility. Mr. Griffith?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, Bill Griffith representing Mall of America Company. We think the intent of the legislation, the amendment, is appropriate and positive. All of this happens on a market basis today. We have very steep discounts for school groups, youth groups, corporate groups. We have marketing programs throughout the state that try and reach Minnesota residents. We have 50% off for school groups. We have free programs for toddlers and families. We have no gate charge. You walk into the park without paying any charge. And there are 350 entertainment events at the in the rotunda that are without charge. So it's one of those places that you can go and you can buy one ticket, you can buy a wristband, you can get a discount. Last summer at Super America, all you had to do was walk up and peel a discount card, and you got $5 off the wristband. So there's a number of programs, and it's our goal to have everybody in the state come visit that theme park. So I think we're on board with the intent, but I think the marketplace has responded well to that challenge.
on the PH014 amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, while Mr. Griffin is at the table, while he's there, I want Mr. Griffin to stay there for the PH015 amendment, Mr. Chair. And again, the committee members will remember that when the mall was in front of the committee, I had also raised the question about the type of wages that are being paid at the Mall America. And I did indicate to them, and I've shown them this amendment, I understand their concerns. But I also understand that about 56% of the employees at the Mall America are seasonal or part-time. And that most of these jobs, the seasonal part-time jobs, are really for the holiday seasons or for the summer times when the various retailers need help with the holiday season or the summertime when a lot of college students get employed at the parks. So the intent of this amendment is not necessarily to cover seasonal or part-time workers. But I would hope that the mall and the city of Bloomington would be willing and able to incorporate this small living wage requirement into any agreements that they negotiate. I think that we heard testimony that the project is one of a number of opportunities for economic development and is considered an economic engine for the state, with differences among committee members. And if that's going to be the case, then I think we should also make sure that we're paying people a wage where they could access the facilities at the Mall America. There's a reference here to Section 469.310, Subdivision 11, Paragraph G, and that's just a reference to the 110% of the federal poverty level. At 110%, it's about $22,000 a year, Mr. Chair.
Council, Senator Moi characterized the wage threshold accurately.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. That is what is included in this provision. And just for a little further information, that is the definition that's included within the Job Z law.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could Council explain then the differences between the local dash 2 that Dibble offered and the PH015?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, the amendment that Senator Dibble offered was a replacement for a provision that had been in the article originally that dealt with labor agreements for hotel employees located at the site, and this applies to employees throughout the facility. And this is more specific to the wage level that would be required to be paid to employees, and the other had to do with representation of hotel workers.
Senator Moi, if the intent is to try to get at full-time employees and not seasonal ones, how would you feel about kind of making it apply only to full-time employees?
I would be open to that, Mr. Chair, if there is if council can insert that language in there.
On a full-time or just employed on a full-time.
Did you use economic engine?
Council, can you suggest some language that does that?
What?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we could amend the PH015 amendment on page 1, line 7, after employed, insert on a full-time basis.
Senator Watt, does that get at what where you'd like to be?
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
Senator Moi incorporates on line 1.7 after the word employed on a full-time basis and continue the sentence. Any other discussion? Senator Pogemner.
Did Senator Moi call them all an economic engine of the state again?
I don't believe I heard her say that, Senator Pogemner. Senator Moi?
I didn't say that, Mr. Chair. I said that's what the project was claimed to be. And if that's what the claim is, and I'm not saying that that's what I think it is, but at least we should strive to give people a living wage who are working there on a full-time basis.
Yes. Well, it includes the equivalent.
Sounds like parsing to me, Mr. Chair.
Council check, members, if that 110% includes benefits or if benefits are on top of that.
So
I think it's benefits.
Plus at least it's inclusive language, not mandated.
The 110% of the poverty rate includes benefits that are not required by law. So, Mr. Griffith, this would set a wage threshold for full-time employees of about $11 an hour, and that could include benefits. Mr. Griffith, is it a deal killer, or is this something, it seems something reasonable to incorporate into the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I can't say today that it's a deal killer because we haven't taken this back to look and see how it applies. We have 11,000 jobs, many of them, the vast majority, above this standard. We also have a lot of seasonal and part-time jobs. My own daughter learned to scoop ice cream there and run a till. And so, you know, I think the amendment, the clarification helps that it applies to full-time positions. The other qualification that I want to offer is there are also, we have one of the largest cart programs, retail cart programs in the country. And so somebody, an entrepreneur, can start a business in the corridor with a cart and have full-time employees, and they're just starting up as a small kind of mom-and-pop business. And we hope to grow them and have grown them over the years into full-fledged retail stores. And so there's a number of things that could be affected by this amendment, maybe unintentionally, that we'd like to be able to look at. But I can say very comfortably that the vast majority of the jobs today at Mall of America are above this standard. And we've met with Senator Mao and have talked about that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does a cart owner, can they, as an owner, make this much money in their business there?
Yes, they can.
All right. Mr. Griffith, I think it's reasonable to put on as on a full-time employee basis, but I guess, you know, as we move forward, it might be helpful if the mall could tell the conference committee if this is something the mall can live with. But I do think it's a good discussion to have, and the only way we're going to have this discussion going down the road is if we have something included in the bill.
I understand, Senator, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide more feedback.
On the PH-015 amendment, all in favor signify by saying, as amended, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, well, Mr. Griffin's at the table. May I ask him a question?
Mr. Griffin? Yeah. Senator Dibble?
Thanks. When we first heard the Mall of America proposal a few days ago, I raised a couple of issues. One of them is provided for in the language, but one I didn't prepare language for just because I didn't quite know how to get at it, but would like to have the opportunity to hear from you or have further discussion, and I raised the subject of those public facilities that we've paid for with public effort located in Minneapolis and St. Paul, you know, namely the theaters and the public venues like that, the convention center, et cetera. And my concern is that if we're going to go to some significant public effort for this development, you know, maybe we're setting up a situation where we're competing against ourselves inappropriately, so we're not really taking a regional look. Since I've had some opportunity to think about it and reflect, I thought, well, that's kind of a defensive approach, and so I'd like to maybe offer a slightly more positive way to think about it and see if the mall developers, in conjunction with maybe the Convention and Visitors Bureaus of St. Paul and Minneapolis and Bloomington, could undertake some sort of effort. I know you said that the folks who are promoting some of the venues in St. Paul are going to be working to promote some of the venues at the Mall of America, which is great. But is there a way that we can really take a look at how we build on, you know, kind of the regional dynamic, the synergy that's available, you know, with St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Bloomington and all the venues that are going to be located therein, so that we're maximizing the potential. We're not defeating our own purposes. You know, maybe putting a little effort forward, a little resource, undertake some sort of study or a market study or some analysis, so that we have some assurance here that we're doing the right thing by putting forward public effort that benefits, you know, all of the past investments that we've made.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, we're not opposed to anything that kind of proves the point, because we're very comfortable with the point that we are filling a market niche that's not currently served in this marketplace, or people would not bring dollars to our state to invest in that fashion. We have also had conversations with the folks who run the Excel arena, with the folks who run the Target Center, and so we're very interested in how our proposal affects any of those facilities. We truly are. I mean, we want to fill a market niche. We want to work on regionalism. That's always been our goal, and we've been at the table for a number of large events, including the national convention that's coming here, the Super Bowl, and anything that's been bid in this marketplace on a regional basis, we've been at the table securing those opportunities for the region, no matter where they land. So we're interested in that approach. We've had conversations with Minneapolis and St. Paul and others, frankly. Burnsville, for instance, we want to make sure that we're a good player in this region.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thanks for your indulgence. Absent an amendment, and that's great. I appreciate that. You know, I don't think just letting the market. You know, we see the market make all kinds of decisions that then ultimately fail. The difference here is that there's a lot of public exposure. You know, both out at the mall site as well as those efforts that we've made in the two downtowns. Like I said, I'm trying to approach this from a positive perspective, so I'd really like to see some real proactive effort so we have some reassurance. You know, I'm being asked to make a significant decision, cast a vote that I'm accountable for, and I need something to kind of back me up. It doesn't have to happen before end of session and the like, but I think it's appropriate to do so, and I'm glad you raised the national convention. That's a great model. I think there's a tremendous amount of cooperation between the three communities as we were courting the two major parties' conventions here, and I think as that is being rolled out with the Republican convention, we can look to that as an example for how we're cooperating now with the three major municipal centers.
Mr. Griffith, I think it would be helpful as we move forward that we continue to have a discussion between, so we don't just create competition for the same customers, that we actually work together as Bloomington and Minneapolis and St. Paul and try to generate new business for the region as we move forward. So I'd appreciate it. I think Senator Double raises a good point. Senator Cohn has raised it to me that if all we're going to do is move business from St. Paul or Minneapolis to Bloomington, we're not really accomplishing any new economic benefit for the region. So I guess as we move forward, I think we need to include those other cities that have facilities that so that we don't view it as a competing project. So,
and Mr. Chairman, I think the mall has been a net benefit to downtown Minneapolis. I think there were a lot of doubters in the early days, and I think we've seen that the mall has brought more people downtown, and the strength of the transit connection has helped that, and I'd like to continue along that same vein so that we see that the mall continues to be a big benefit and we all draw upon each other.
Mr. Griffith, thank you. Members, any other amendments for the local development article? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, not an amendment, but just a comment. I have problems with this. And Senator Dibble, when you're talking about the competition between these facilities, again, the XL Center had public money, too, and the Target Center public money, too. And I think the whole nature of these subsidies are, we say it's a necessity because we make it one. And we can't afford to fund basic transportation needs in the state and basic human service needs, basic health care needs, and we sure have the money to put into these projects, and I'm far from convinced that this is a but-for case. These things aren't going to happen. I mean, they change in their nature some, but when government gets into the handing out of business subsidies, I actually think these two projects might be a little bit better, at least the Thompson went a little bit better than the Job Z program, but I just think it's by its own nature inequitable and unfair to other businesses and other taxpayers.
Anything else on local development? Senator Moi, we're going back to the sales tax article to deal with Senator Pogelmiller's amendment. Senator Moi, Senator Ortman, do we have one amendment now, or what do we have?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm hoping that Senator Pogelmiller would consider my version of his, but he may want to offer his separately.
Mr. Chair, I have the SALES 3 amendment from, I believe that's Senator Pogelmiller's amendment.
Cool.
Mr. Chair, mine is sales for, and it's just a little broader than Senator Pogemiller's.
So one will end up replacing the other, whichever one prevails, I guess. Senator Ortman, which one would you, we'll defer to you, which one would you like to take first?
Well, Mr. Chair, I hope we would take up sales four if Senator Maul would allow me the courtesy.
I think that's fine. You know, we could play a game of trying to divide it and all that stuff, but why don't we just, let's just take up sales four. Senator Ortman, what's in, Senator Ortman moves sales dash four. What's in sales dash four and how much does it cost?
Well, Mr. Chair, you look on the back of the page, page two, section 13 is Senator Pogemiller's and now Senator Moore's amendment to allow sales tax exemption for commuter rail, and my understanding is that $7.7 million. It comes out of the governor's recommendation. The addition would be what's on the front, and that's section 11, paragraph 7, which would allow the sales tax exemption to be extended to trunk highway sales taxes as well. It would be an exemption for those purchases. It comes out of the governor's recommendation as well, and my understanding from what I've been told, it was $8.7 million in addition, so the total package would be approximately $16 million as opposed to the $7.7 in sales three.
So, Senator Ortman, if we adopt this, we're going to have to find $8.7 million to get the to add to the spreadsheet. Is that accurate?
Well, Mr. Chair, the current bill doesn't balance, with all due respect, and I'd like to add the $8.7 million. I think that it makes sense if we're going to exempt the commuter rail from paying sales tax. Those projects, the state's also very interested in having the highway sales tax exemption, and I think that Minnesotans would support both or neither, but let's make sure we have a policy that makes some sense, and we should do all these projects. And I hope the committee will support the consistency, the effort towards consistency here.
On the sales dash four amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the sales three amendment.
Senator Moore offers sales dash three with the deletion of, on line 1.5, delete and light rail.
I will incorporate that, Mr. Chair.
I think we all know what this does. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Freeze it up. Colfer, do we have any other amendments?
No, Mr. Chair. There are no more amendments that we're aware of.
Members, any other amendments? Anybody? Senator Marty moves to incorporate the amended articles into Senate File 1024. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 1024 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. And as part of the motion, we allow staff to make technical corrections in the language. All in, Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, it'll come as no surprise, with all due respect to the chairs and all the work that the committee has done in the development of this bill, and all the testimony in support and opposition of the provisions. The overall package is unsupportable, and it's not sustainable. And I worry very much about the imposition of these very regressive taxes on the residents of the state of Minnesota and the hardship that families will face, and that will certainly be accompanied by recessions in families and in businesses, if not at the state level. And I mean to express my opposition respectfully, but I do oppose the bill.
Senator Ortman, somebody asked me yesterday if you could characterize the omnibus tax bill, how would you characterize it? One of the press actually asked me that. Members, this is a property tax relief bill. I mean, for homeowners. There is almost $380 million a year in property tax relief in this bill. And yes, it has some revenue raisers in it, but property taxes for homeowners are going to go down about 5.8%, down about 5.8% when the Senate passes this bill if it were to become law. So that's where the lion's share of the money is spent in this bill. It's spent on property tax relief. It's spent on a local government aid, on program aid to counties, on some aid to townships, on money for the circuit breaker, money for the market value credit. And the governor had many of those things in his bill. In fact, I think he had all of those things in his bill, but at a reduced level. And because he just didn't have the resources available to do the kind of property tax relief that I think people expect. So we've enhanced the governor's budget proposal relative to property tax relief, and that really is where the lion's share of this money is being spent. We're not, you know, many tax bills that leave this committee have a whole lot of tax expenditures in them. And this one doesn't. And members, when this gets to the floor, you'll see when it's all put together, there aren't that many pages in this bill compared to other tax bills that the Senate has passed. And it's because we don't have a lot of spending in this bill outside of property tax relief. The only real large item in here probably is Senator Rest's proposal to provide a credit to individuals who stay home and take care of their disabled children or their incapacitated other family members. And that's a pretty large tax expenditure, but I think it's worth recognizing those tens of thousands of households who are doing that. Other than that, there really aren't many tax expenditures in the bill. Senator Hartman?
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I would never characterize this as a property tax relief bill because we've turned around and $250,000 we're going to raise at the expense of business in the business property taxes in this biennium, $466 million in the next biennium, and that's going to translate into reduced wages and lost jobs and terrible for our communities and our small businesses. They fuel our economy. And we're going to penalize them. And then we're going to send money off to the cities and counties with no guarantee that that money will ever go to a homeowner. We're just going to add it to the bottom line, and it'll turn into two more noxious weed inspectors in some city. There's no reason that we can translate this into real property tax relief. And then, Mr. Chair, you have to add in the fact that we are going to put $629 million into the reserve fund, which I support. I supported it on the Senate floor. But we're really just taking that money right out of the property tax payers and their savings accounts. And the people that are earning income, we're just going to turn around and take the money out of savings to pay for it and spend it again in the next bill. And so you may separate this bill out and say this is property tax relief, but it's going to turn into the next bill, which is $500 million in income tax increases. So you've got income tax increases, business property tax increases, not to mention all the transportation tax increases. And this is just a budget buster for every Minnesota family, for every Minnesota business, but it sure protects the state's budget and our cushion. And I think it's unfortunate that we've gone in this direction. We've gone way too far, and people will pay for this, and it will create hardship regardless of your good intentions.
Do we have, just briefly, I think, members, it would be helpful if we had just a little bit of testimony from people in the public that have been sitting very patiently here today. If you want to kind of line up and everybody take a couple minutes to express how you feel. I think we know how XL Energy feels, so we probably don't have to hear from them again. But Joe Matthews, I see he's the first one lined up at the mic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties, also speaking today on behalf of MICA, the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I'm going to be real brief. I just want to thank you for your efforts, Senator Scully, for your efforts on county program aid. I did have a chance to go over the spreadsheet, and I see that every county in the state of Minnesota is receiving some significant relief from the unfunded mandates that the state has handed down over the years, and $60 million will go a long way in our budgets towards taking some reliance away from the property tax and maybe sharing that burden with some of the other taxes that are a little more progressive. I do think that our folks on the county level really, really needed this relief. We've lost about $242 million in county programming the last 5 years, and this doesn't restore all of that money, but it does make a real step in the right direction. We really appreciate that. Some other provisions that we do support, the sales tax exemption for emergency vehicles is very important. We'd obviously like to keep pursuing that issue and move away from local governments paying the sales tax. And also, I'd like to just point out that included in the bill was the OPEB provisions that allow us to properly fund some of our ongoing liabilities. And there's a number of other things that we do like in the bill. I won't go through them all, but I just want to thank you and the members of the committee for your support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not a question, it's a comment. There is some nice things in this bill. I like the capital investment swap or refund or whatever you want to call it. One thing, though, I have to agree with Senator Ortman is there's no language in the bill that says the county aid will reduce the property tax burden. There's no language that says this will be passed on to the homeowners. And you know, not to speak, my county works really good within its budget, really good. But I know there will probably be added jobs before it gets on my property tax roll.
Mr. Matthews, just briefly on that.
Mr. Chair, in the property tax division, we had this discussion. Counties have lost 22% of their aid per capita. Property taxes have only gone up 5%. We've done everything we can do to live within our means. I'm talking on the whole statewide, and I'm talking on a per capita basis. And from our perspective, after we spent down reserves, we didn't get any relief from the mandates that were imposed when our funding was cut. And so for us to be forced to provide a number of services and not given the revenue to do it, all we can do is go to the property tax. 90% of Ramsey County's budget, or give or take, is the result of mandates. Most counties, it's 65 to 70%. So with that in hand, we have limited options at our disposal when it comes time to balance our budgets. We can't run a deficit, and we can't borrow for everything.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, the counties also raised all their fees. Are the counties going to reduce their fees as a result of this bill?
Senator Ortman, I can't speak specifically from each county, but I know in speaking with our commissioners, all of them have a lot of heartburn when fees or taxes have to be raised. The folks that they represent are very close to them. These are their friends and neighbors and church members. And when it comes time to make a decision about spending and whether or not to raise a fee or a tax in order to provide a service, they have to choose between some really hard choices. They don't have an option to push it down to any other forms of government. They don't have an option to just step away from some of the mandates that are imposed. And these folks really care about the folks that they represent, and I think that there's a lot of thought that goes into the process when these are raised.
Mr. O'Rourke, next. Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I want to thank you for the quick opportunity today to testify on behalf of your bill that's before you. And along with that, I want to thank you for the attention you've given in both the division and your full committee to property tax issues this session. Obviously, the League and others appreciate the LGA increase that you've provided in this bill and do appreciate the volatility fix that the League brought forward and the taconite aid offset fix as well. As far as the LGA study goes, we are more than happy to participate in that group discussion, I would imagine, both this summer and fall. It'll take a lot of energy, and we're ready to do that, because I think you saw a couple proposals brought forward this year that really show evidence that there are holes with the current LGA formula. So we respect what you're doing in this bill before you today. Real quick, along with the counties, we appreciate the sales tax exemption for emergency vehicles and the utility property tax classification provision, and also the revenue recapturing amendment that you took up today that will be helpful for cities as well. Real quick and specifically, in the local development and public finance articles, those are provisions that the League works on with the Minnesota Public Institute of Public Finance, and other TIF watchers. And we appreciate just the things that and the discussions that you've had within this committee and today with your amendments. We look forward to working with you in the future on any concerns you have on any of these programs as well. And I'd stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rourke. Ms. Nauman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman, and I represent the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. We have 86 members in our organization, and we appreciate the opportunity to respond to the Senate File 1024. Appreciate the comprehensive nature of this bill and its focus on providing property tax relief. We also appreciate the reinstatement of the market value homestead credit. Our policies do support having this credit be paid directly to homeowners, so at some point we would encourage the legislature to restructure that program so that it does provide the credit directly to the homeowner rather than as a reimbursement to cities. But we do appreciate the reinstatement of the credit in this bill. We also appreciate the increase in the LGA appropriation, as well as the volatility fix, the small city aid adjustment, and the fix to the taconite, or removal of the taconite offset aid. And we really appreciate the committee's recognition that the current LGA formula is not sufficient to meet the needs of all cities in the state, and look forward to working with you as you study this program to create, to look at making the program more fair, creating a more fair and rational policy for the future on LGA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Nolan.
Mr. Chairman, members, Phil Griffin representing Life Science Alley. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, and thank you for your support of the provisions in Senate File 1024, the Omnibus Tax Bill, relating particularly to Section 5, which contains the language from Senator Langseth's bill, Senate File 1639, creating an individual income tax credit for investments in qualified business ventures related to the biosciences and medical devices. Mr. Chairman, members, I don't want to belabor the issues going on, but we've been before many committees this year asking you to support an educated workforce that will help the biosciences and medical device industry in the state to do some work in really funding the research that needs to go on, and Senator Langseth's committee has done an excellent job in that, and there's some one-time money that was appropriated this morning in Senator Cohen's committee for the genomics partnership between Mayo and the university. One of the other things we've been asking for is some economic development money. This is similar to a program that is going on in Wisconsin, and we think that it will really help to try and fund some of the ventures that need to go on to expand our biosciences in the state. We appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee and to support this provision. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and Senator Langseth in particular.
Everybody's not happy. Mr. Ahern, how are the mining companies?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Ahern, and as of this morning, I was asked by Mr. Dana Byrne from Cleveland Cliffs to read a statement on behalf of Cleveland Cliffs. Cleveland Cliffs and its three managed taconite mines, North Shore Mining Company, United Taconite Company, and Hibbing Taconite Company, strongly oppose Sections 1, 2, 4, and 6 of the Minerals Article. The elimination of the investment tax credit for the mines that produce between 3 and 8 million tons of pellets, and the proposal to subject power plants and ore docks to general property tax, are clearly designed to single out and raise the tax burden on Cleveland Cliffs operations. This action raises serious constitutional questions and reflects poorly on the state. These provisions appear to be retaliatory against Cliffs for business decisions they have made during the past year. While justified as incentives, these punitive measures will have adverse effects and possible effects on planned investments and new jobs in Minnesota. Cliffs will have no alternative but to pass these increased taxes on to their customers, which could also jeopardize projects currently proposed for the Iron Range. Accordingly, we strongly urge that Sections 1, 2, 4, and 6 be stricken from the bill. And he regrets he could not be here. And as some of you may know, the new director of the Iron Mining Association, I think, is just on board, and he's not able to be here. So,
I believe he started yesterday, Mr. Ahern.
Oh, did he?
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I remember when this bill came to committee, Senator Tomasoni brought it. And he kind of characterized it as a forest redevelopment bill.
That is, Senator Johnson, that is part of what's in the minerals article is only, that's only part of what's in there, Senator Tomasoni's forest revision.
But Mr. Chairman, I guess because when he presented the bill that there was no opposition at the table, I didn't realize it was going to have an impact on the taconite developers.
Senator Johnson, I made it very clear when I presented the minerals article that the mining company's taxes were going to go up. You can read the tape. You can listen to the tape, and I clearly said that. And I don't expect them to be happy about it, but that's where we're at today. That's where the members of the range delegation think we should be as a matter of policy, and it's no impact on the state general fund. It's a local production tax that's paid in lieu of property taxes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Vanosik here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships, and want to thank the committee and its members for including provisions relating to the sales tax exemption for emergency response vehicles, also for including restoration of 40% of our HACA aid back in 2001 levels. In 2001, we lost 100% of our HACA aid. And 100% of our LGA amounted to $33 million at that time. And just point out, you know, town levies haven't doubled from 2000 to 2006. And the 51% of our expenditures are in roads, and we are responsible for 43% of the road miles in the state, along with the bridges that are required to pass those roads. So we thank the committee for this work and the full Senate for the work on the transportation bill.
Mr. Vanosik, clearly one of the big losers in the 2001 property tax reform were the townships. And the legislature took all of their HACA away. And frankly, we were very honest about it. We told them, go levy it back. And this is a small effort on our part to recognize what I think was a mistake that was made in 2001 that affected property taxes for people who live in townships significantly, and this is a small effort to try to get 40%, only 40% of the aid that they got prior to the 2001 reform back. I want to thank Senator Scoy for his effort to do that. This was done in his division, and Mr. Vanosik, I hope that when we get into conference that we can hang on to it.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Langseth.
When it came to, I think the big problem there was the total elimination of it. There were, like in my district, there are many townships that weren't getting very much because they were very high valuation. The township I happen to be in, there's some fair farmland on the one end and the rest is very, very poor. And so about half of their revenue came from the township aid. And when it was totally eliminated, even though we had farmland taxes going down fairly substantially, my farmland and other farmers in that township went up. So I think when it was done, it really should have been done differently and just said that a certain amount of it came down, because in the very low-value townships, boy, it just really clobbered the township. And I realize this, by going back like we are, it will probably help those low-value townships more than the high-value townships.
Thank you, Mr. Bonanza.
Chairman, members, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. When we began this session, Senator Scoy brought all the cities, the counties, the townships, the school districts in to talk about what was occurring in property taxes in his division. And one thing that was very clear is we all kind of came out with the same type of graph. It showed property taxes going up, it showed aids down, and it showed our revenues flat or decreasing. Basically, we had our members running for their elected offices, just like you, saying, our property taxes are going up, but so and your services are going down or not increasing. What this bill does is it restores the partnership between the cities, the townships, the schools, and the counties and the state. And for that, we thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. First, I'd like to start with a couple of provisions that we support in the bill. We very, very much appreciate the fact that you included the conversion of the sales tax refund program to an upfront exemption. That's an item that's been on the business community's agenda for several years, and with the amount of one-time money that you had available, we're just appreciate the fact that you devoted a lot of that to converting the to an upfront exemption. Second, we also appreciate inclusion of the acceleration of single sales factor apportionment in the bill. That's an important competitive item for Minnesota companies, and again, that does make a difference. We appreciate that being included in the bill. However, the price tag for those two items seems to be a little steep for us at this time. With the inclusion of the statewide property tax increase, that's a $222 million increase in this biennium. It grows to $460-some million the next biennium and then keeps growing after that. In addition, the bill also includes the foreign operating corporation changes that have been a consistent part of the Senate tax bill the last two or three years, and I won't bore you with details on that today. But we do want to make clear that those we do oppose, continue to oppose those two provisions. And let me also add on the utility classification rate changes. Given the testimony earlier from Xcel Energy, we do have some concern about the potential rate impact on business customers that will result because of the change in the classification rates on utility properties. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hesse, I agree. I think that the swap for the capital invest or capital equipment buyout just doesn't match up with what it's going to do to CI. But my question's been about the penalties on the FOC stuff. In the last couple years when we've listened to it, we've talked about how restrictive and really how we talked about a California model and Illinois model regarding the penalties, and we haven't had any conversation about that this year. And I don't even know that they're in the bill still. Have you had a chance to study that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, I'm not sure what you're referring to, the California model. I'm certainly aware of what Illinois has done about two or three years ago, which is, I think, a similar approach to this, at least one component of the Senate's bill, except for that on the add-back that is in the Senate bill, there typically are safe harbors in the Illinois statute that say if a transaction meets one of the safe harbor conditions, that those transactions, you don't have to add back any interest or intangible expense. So that is one thing that's lacking, certainly, in the add-back provision of the Senate bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Hesse, I think I opposed the look-back number of years in the past, too. Do you know what the look-back is on this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, I do believe that the last section in the corporate income tax article does allow there to be some retroactive changes to the tax law that we certainly are concerned about.
But, Mr. Hesse, I think the 06 bill said 10 years. Which was just a ludicrous idea. Is this down to five or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, it's really open-ended. If a company has a tax return that is open for state tax purposes, my understanding of the change is that the language that's being passed in this bill would be able to be applied to any of those open returns for any past tax year.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Hesse can talk about this or Ms. Von Mosch, because I know she's an expert on this, but how the number that we come up with for foreign operating corporations is always a question for me, because I don't think that it's anything more than a guess. Is there any science to determining how much we're actually going to raise if we make these changes, Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I think that would be a question better answered by the Department of Revenue than me.
Mr. Chair, can they testify to that if they're here?
We can let's ask Revenue that kind of as we go out the door.
Thank you.
Mr. Hickey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Really sends the wrong signal to all the job creators out there who are affected by it. state handles fiscal matters, especially in times of surplus, but it's a bad signal regardless. We made some progress on the thorny issue of working property taxes back in 01, but we really didn't make that much progress. NIOP put out another great piece, they do it annually, and Minnesota still ranks third in a local comparison on about a $1 million manufacturing property. we didn't make that much progress. It was clearly progress, but this is the wrong signal to send, and we urge you not to do it. Finally, I did want to say we do appreciate the conversion to an upfront exemption of capital. That does mean a lot to the small manufacturer. We get it right away. Small business people are not big on filling out forms and tracking paperwork. They feel like they're overwhelmed to start with. And we also appreciate accelerating the phase in the single sales factor for our C-Corps. The vast majority of our members are S, sub S-Corps, but for our C-Corps, we do appreciate that. And I guess I'll probably see you tomorrow.
Mr. Hickey, I just want to be clear on the small businesses that you represent in the first tier. When I look at the property tax run under this bill, they would have a 2.5% property tax increase. 2.5% is what our run tells us the increase on small businesses is going to be. You know, Mr. Hickey, I got to tell you, homeowners over the last few years, they would have been rallying at the Capitol in support of a 2.5% property tax increase. Homeowners have been seeing 6, 8, 10% property tax increases for years. And I think asking the business community, the small business community, to be willing to swallow a 2.5% increase so that we can provide some relief and actually reduce property taxes for homeowners, I just don't think it's that unreasonable. It's probably less than the rate of inflation, a 2.5% increase. I just want to make sure that you recognize on the run that we've provided that. I just don't think it's fair to characterize we're socking it to the business community. I think a 2.5% increase is pretty reasonable. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Hickey's still at the table. I think this conversation might get a little longer than the chair would like. But I think what Mr. Hickey is referring to is in the 90s, we were trying to create some compression that the CI was way out of line in comparison to the homeowner's property tax. And we were trying to level that off. And then, of course, Governor Ventura had to get that piece in there for his education reform, and that's where the compression started to go away, and we started to see the balancing act right then and there. I think it was enacted in 2001. Now it might seem like it's only a 2% increase, but now you're going to see it start going in the opposite direction. I mean, if you analyze it over the last couple of decades, right at 2001, we were at kind of an equal balancing act. Now you're asking for that gap to go in the other direction.
Well, Senator Johnson, I don't think that's fair. I mean, what the bill does is puts business property taxes on the same playing field as other classes of property, in that their taxes will go up if their market value goes up, just like homes do, farms do. I mean, that hasn't been the case for a large part of the business property tax burden. It's just had an inflation index in it. All we're really doing here is saying business property should be treated like other classes of property, and if their market value goes up, potentially their tax burden goes up. I think we're just kind of leveling the playing field with all the other classes of property. Now, if I've mischaracterized that, I think Senator Skoy can probably comment on that, but I believe that's what we're doing in the bill.
And to the exact point of valuation, we can valuate residential property very, very clearly over and over and over again because there's a lot of it out there and there's a lot of a turnover to it. But we can't really get to the exact valuation of commercial property. There's not as much turnover. I'm sure there's plenty of businesses out there that got their valuations and just went nuts, you know, because they see it different than what their appraisers are seeing it as.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up. And then if we do misvalue the property, look out, because then the cities and communities will be here to say that they need to protect the revenue stream from the overvalued property. We heard that today.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Marty Schmidt, representing the Minnesota Assessing Officers in the state of Minnesota. We'd just like to let you know that we support Section 16, Section 21 regarding unplatted rural lands, along with the movement that eliminates the seasonal residential recreational classification. And we also like to thank you for including all the recommendations that were in all the reports that you received last year and this year. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Schmidt, your association supports. Did we incorporate most of what you needed?
Pretty much so.
Senator Skoy, good work. Senator Ortman, I think it's important that we give our assessors the kind of language and law they need so that they can do a good job of assessing property, and I hope this bill has somehow helped you do that so that people are only being assessed for what the real value of their property is.
That's our goal, is to create that equal assessment and valuation.
And, Mr. Schmidt, this will help?
Yes, it will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cox?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Wayne Cox, Executive Director of Minnesota Citizens for Tax Justice, whose members include the Minnesota FL-CIO and a number of other civic labor and religious organizations around the state. I'm here to testify in favor of your bill. We think that it is important in a number of aspects. It provides some needed property tax relief for homeowners. In recent years, the tax incident study done by the Department of Revenue has shown that there's been a big shift from commercial taxes on the homeowners, and the net result has been a increase in the regressivity of the overall tax system in recent years. A lot of that came because of the changes made in 2001, so we think that what you're doing is a necessary corrective from some of those changes in a way that would help homeowners, but in a way that would not be unduly burdensome on businesses. The changes you're proposing to make relative to foreign operating corporations we think are appropriate. We think they're carefully drawn. We think that there's language in there that is very necessary that says that if a transaction is done for economic reasons in terms of involving a foreign entity, that basically the state recognizes that cannot be recognized to diminish the taxes otherwise applicable. We think this is a correction needed in law to make the laws operate in the way that they were originally intended. We don't think this will be burdensome. We think it will eliminate the type of manipulation of the tax system that's been allowed in recent years. In terms of the statewide property tax, we think that that will bring some balance, and as you've said, it will not result in an increase in property taxes for businesses, statewide businesses. That would be overly burdensome. We think that on net, what you're doing is good and positive for the state, and that we support your adoption of the provisions.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to testify? Mr. Manson here. Could the department speak to the revenue summary on the FOCs? Senator Ortman had a question on. Mr. Manson, we've put in our spreadsheet the dollars that the department determined was we would be able to collect from the FOC language on the bill. Senator Ortman is not so sure that your revenue estimate is accurate. Could you kind of
Senator Urban, you want to ask your question?
Mr. Chair, I would never suggest that their revenue estimate is inaccurate on this. What I'm wondering is how confident is the Department of Revenue in the estimated number that they will recover if they make these changes?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, this is a difficult estimate to come up with, and we've been working on it for years now. And I did talk to Dr. Wilson, the research director, and they feel this is very comfortable and confident in these numbers. And the reason for that is it's kind of it's concentrated in the number of taxpayers that use that, and we can actually go to their returns and find out the kind of the whole population that's being using it. So that's pretty easy to get to. The hard, more difficult part is kind of slicing and dicing what language would impact that total population. But as I said, they're getting more and more expertise with it, and they said they believe they have pretty good data and pretty confident with the number.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, some of the difficulty because the corporations themselves get to choose when to domesticate the income, and so can we always anticipate how much of that income will be domesticated?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, that is the difficult component, is kind of determining the domestic versus the foreign source income. So that's where we struggle at that part of it. So we're confident that we're in the ballpark, and
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen. Anybody else in the audience like to testify to Senate File 1024? Seeing nobody, Senator Moi renews her motion that Senate File 1024, as amended, be recommended to pass, and giving Senate counsel the authority to make technical corrections in the language. On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Senate File 1024 is passed. And members, this will be on, should be, this committee report will be reported to the floor today. We anticipate this bill to be on the Senate floor tomorrow. The committee will meet tomorrow morning. I understand Finance is sending us something. I don't know what it is, but there will be a committee report from Finance today on the floor, and we will take up whatever Finance sent us tomorrow morning at 8:30. Committee's adjourned.